Johnson. Hunter Haas filling in for Matt McNeil on your Monday afternoon. Hunter, how you doing today?
I'm good. Excited to be here again, this time at 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, yeah, getting bumped up an hour. Matt's still on vacation. I know he's running around town. I think he described it as not necessarily being a vacation. He's going up north, but I think he has all sorts of kids' activities going on.
Yeah, busy trip. It's one of those vacations you need a vacation afterwards to relax.
He'll be racking up the miles, yeah, on that Toyota Sienna that he owns from Rudy Luther Toyota. See, I'm already plugging his sponsors. How about
Heck,
that?
Good job. Picking up right in stride.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we have a lot to talk about today on AM 950. And first up is that Pride weekend just wrapped up. AM 950 was out at Pride and had a booth. And Hunter, I know you were out at Pride representing the AM 950 booth. Had a good time?
Yeah, it was a blast. A lot of fun. Met with a lot of people, a lot of interesting booths, saw a lot of interesting people, but yeah, it was a really good time.
But unfortunately, one of the controversies we've had with Pride has been, well, the presence of police. Given the history of Pride and how it relates to the Stonewall riots, questions arise as to what type of presence, if any, the police should have at Pride festivals. Joining us now is Erica Mauder, who is the chair of the Stonewall DFL. She wrote a piece in City Pages on Friday titled, "Cops Are Welcome at Twin Cities Pride, Just Not in Uniform." Erica, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So, first up, before we get into the subject, I want to know and get a little background on what exactly is the Stonewall DFL, the organization that you're the chair of?
Sure, yeah. So, Stonewall is the DFL's LGBTQ caucus. And so, our job is to represent Democrats in Minnesota who have been historically marginalized due to their sexual orientation, their gender identity or presentation, or their HIV status. And so in doing that, we organize within the DFL party. We endorse and support candidates and elected officials to move policy that affects our constituency. We work in coalition with other organizations representing LGBTQ folks and with other community caucuses within the DFL. And then we also, this is a thing I'd like us to do more of, develop potential DFL candidates who do identify as members of our community, and then support our elected officials who also identify as LGBTQ.
Just a question out of curiosity, how many members, let's say, of the state legislature do we have that are members of the LGBTQ community?
We have, as this biennium is ending, we have 4 members of our state legislative caucus. That's State Senator Scott Dibble and State Representatives Karen Clark, Susan Allen, and Erin May Quaid. And looking at, you know, this is an election year, so looking at who's coming up and with the retirements and such, we might actually lose some people in that caucus. And that is not the direction I'd like to see us head in, but we are electing LGBTQ candidates in different places around the state, not just to the legislature.
And another question relating to that as well, how do we compare to other states when it comes to having LGBTQ members of state legislators?
Not many states are doing very well on this front. Minnesota has a relatively large proportion of our population that identifies as LGBT or Q. And I think we're seeing the same thing as we see along a number of other demographic lines where our elected officials don't actually represent or reflect the demographics of our population.
So moving along now to Pride weekend, which of course just took place last weekend, I think what a lot of people, I don't know necessarily a lot, but I know there's a large portion of people that see Pride weekend and they just see it as a celebration of being part of the LGBTQ community. But there actually is a history of how Pride weekend actually started and how it relates to the Stonewall riots. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and this is how Stonewall DFL got its name. Back when it was less safe to be out, in New York City, folks who identified as lesbian or gay or trans had a hard time finding places to get together and safely be themselves and celebrate and just hang out with each other. And so they had a number of clandestine ways in which they did that, but they were also consistently antagonized by police. And so the Stonewall riots happened when folks, patrons at the Stonewall Inn, were basically, after being targeted yet again by police, were like, we're not going to take it. And they fought back. And that was led by a number of trans women of color And that kicked off kind of what we know as the gay rights movement of today. And Pride, as we know it, is celebrated at the end of June because those Stonewall riots happened at the end of June. And Pride has become a celebration for our community, but it has its roots in that uprising against continued targeting and violence by police.
And I think it's a good point to bring up that history, because when people see in the news that there's controversy about whether the police should be involved in Pride festivals or not, it's important to bring up that historical context of how the festival even started. And just relating to that, there are a lot of people that are members of the LGBT community that aren't necessarily comfortable with that police presence. Can you expand on it a little bit more?
For sure, yeah. So, you know, we'll acknowledge that various laws require, when you have large gatherings of people, that you need law enforcement to help provide safety, you know, public safety, security, traffic management, those kinds of things. And we have the, I guess, good problem that Twin Cities Pride is the second largest outdoor event in Minnesota after the state fair. And so it stands to reason that there would be a sizable police presence just because there is such a large crowd. At the same time, a lot of members of the LGBTQ community are also people of color. And while white queer folks, queer and trans folks, do disproportionately are disproportionately victimized by police, that is even more the case for queer and trans people of color. And even for folks who, for people of color who aren't LGBTQ, we are well aware of the fact that police violence and targeting is an epidemic problem. And so all of those things come together at Pride, and queer and trans people of color have been trying to communicate, make people understand, demanding that people acknowledge that our lived experience tells us that police are a threat to our safety. Police, in our lived experience, do not provide safety. They cause danger. And so what we are asking is that our Pride organization holds both the history and this current reality and be responsive to the wishes of queer and trans people of color. So Stonewall DFL specifically has been asking for a moderated or a softer police presentation. So acknowledging that ordinance requires you need, you know, officers for traffic management, you need some sort of, you know, public safety security around the park. Are there ways that we can do that that doesn't look like we're being surveilled by police officers in uniform? And MPD Chief Arredondo and Park Police Chief Ojado made some changes this year to help bring that along. But we also know that our own Pride organization is defending the right of police officers who are also LGBTQ to spend their off-duty time in uniform at the festival, and is denouncing, you know, there were protesters at the parade, and denouncing protesters as not being part of Pride's mission of inclusivity. And so Stonewall DFL kind of sits at that nexus of the LGBTQ community, but also the political system that has some jurisdiction over policing. So we're trying to use our point to work with our elected officials and also the Pride organization. So we have policy change moving on both those avenues to help our queer and trans people of color feel more safe and welcome at Twin Cities Pride.
So I was actually at Pride, and I witnessed the parade and protesters. It was like a coalition of Black Lives Matter and DSA and other organizations. Mm-hmm. And I was standing next to two officers in uniform. So you're saying that I believe they were doing traffic is why they were there. So you have it set up that where does that extend to exactly? The police in the parade only you don't want in uniform, or how far does that go?
Sure. So what we're asking, what Stonewall DFL is asking, and I will acknowledge that this is different from what some other community organizations are asking for. What Stonewall DFL is asking for is that if you are on duty as a police officer, so you're providing traffic management or security.
Version of
your uniform as possible. So maybe you don't need – so the way the park police did this –
Hey, Erica, could I just interrupt you for 1 second? We lost you for about 10 seconds. Can you go back and just kind of recap what you were saying just a minute ago? Yep.
Sure. Sorry about that. Yeah. So we're asking that what Stonewall DFL is asking for, which is distinct from other community organizations, is that police who are on duty – take the sort of softest presentation that they can. So the way park police did this was by wearing bike uniforms instead of their full with the bulletproof vest and the gun and the baton and all that stuff. If you're providing traffic management, what is the sort of least you can wear and still be in uniform so that you're not putting forward the I am armed and dangerous version of yourself as a police officer. We absolutely think that officers who identify as LGBTQ should be welcome at Pride, just like everyone else, but we ask you to do it out of uniform. And what we're asking people to understand is that the uniform represents the institution of policing, and that is what is threatening to people of color.
So the next question I have for you, you talked a little bit about how the Pride organization itself has sometimes come down on the side of police when it comes to planning the festival, but you mentioned there were some changes made this year. I know last year, we had a big controversy where Pride reversed its position, where last year they said originally we don't want police involved, and they said they are welcome. They went back and forth on that issue. Do you think they've changed how they've run the organization and had a more consistent message and something that's made members of the LGBT community happier with how things have been run this year compared to last?
Mm-hmm. I've seen a little bit of movement. So one thing that they did was it used to be that Minneapolis police officers could join the, you know, were required to have a single squad car that leads off a parade. And so Minneapolis police officers in uniform would walk with that squad car. And that was voluntary and didn't require a contingent. So we're just allowing police to lead off our Pride parade. Pride did change their policy on that, and so police, if they want to participate in the parade, have to buy their own contingent like everyone else does. That was a great change, and we appreciate that they did that. The other changes around what officers are wearing, those were volunteered by the two police chiefs that have jurisdiction over the parade and the festival, which we appreciate. And Pride has some language in the application around what police and fire and EMS, because they have uniforms, there's some language in the application about Pride's expectation around uniforms. However, what Pride has so far been unwilling to do is actually stand up for the idea that, and you can hold these truths at the same time, that police officers are welcome off duty as themselves out of uniform. That's not a stand that they want to take. And not only will they not stand up for that, they, as they said in distancing themselves from protesters, they refuse to still affirm what queer and trans people of color want or need to feel safe at the parade. And the truth is, sometimes defending police and making queer and trans people of color feel safe are in conflict, and you know, you're never going to please everyone at the same time. But so far, we've been centering the needs and the wishes of people who mostly are white and are defending law enforcement, and that inherently excludes and disregards the wishes of queer and trans people of color.
We're speaking with Erica Mauder, who is the chair of the Stonewall DFL in Minnesota. And a point you just brought up is how the current police chief made some of these changes on his own, but I know you wrote in the City Pages article, those changes might not be permanent because things can certainly change if we were to get a new police chief. So I think what you're saying is you'd like to see Pride also make these changes as well, correct?
I would. I would like to see further policy change for Pride as an organization. And further, this is where, you know, Stonewall DFL uniquely has the opportunity to use our relationships with our elected officials to see what is possible from a policy standpoint within each of these police departments as well. So we're talking to our Minneapolis City Council members and the mayor. We're talking to our Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board commissioners as well. So that is a role that Stonewall is uniquely taking up because these decisions, I think, should not be at the discretion of any one police chief.
Erica, we're unfortunately up against the clock, but I really do appreciate you joining the program. Again, we've been speaking with Erica Mauder, who is the chair of the Stonewall DFL. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day to join us.
Thank you. Appreciate the invitation.
You are listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Hunter filling in for Matt McNeil on your Monday afternoon. We have more conversation ahead, including talking about what happened over the weekend with a very sad shooting of a man in North Minneapolis. We'll get into that right on the other side of the break. Matt McNeil Show, AM 950. On his horse. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's striving and driving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns.
Minnesota is home to the only major institution in North America devoted to Russian art, history, and culture. The Museum of Russian Art, located off 35W on Diamond Lake Road in South Minneapolis, can be your personal connection to extraordinary artists, stories, and context. We offer more exhibitions and events than ever before, from concerts and lectures to vodka tastings and more. Open daily, free parking, and a great Groupon deal. Find out more at tmora.org.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. Our weekly Native American talk radio show will discuss national and local Native American news and events. Local and national guests will help us keep current with Mother Earth, tribal, and Twin City issues. Native American issues are human issues. We invite all people to walk hand in hand with our struggles, victories, and achievements. Listen Saturdays at 2 p.m.
I am awake.
The Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe is ready for the cold, serving seasonal dishes using locally sourced ingredients, Minnesota craft beers, and organic wines. Their delicious vegetarian, vegan, and omnivorous menu options are sure to satisfy. New items include the cauliflower po' boy, harvest chili, braised beef tostada, and the pork banh mi, as well as rotating seasonal vegetables and pasta. Sustaining a healthy community, you will find Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe at 2601 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis and online at coopcreamery.coop.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 1994, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated, full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Hunter filling in for Matt McNeil on your Monday afternoon. Matt's running around town, maybe relaxing up north. Either way, I know he's got a very busy week ahead, but he's back on Friday, so your Matt McNeil needs will definitely be met by them. Going back to our last interview from just a second ago, talking about the police presence at Pride when we were speaking with the chair of the Stonewall DFL, Erica Mauder, wanted to make sure I get that name right. We had a question on our Facebook feed from Mark who says, well, he's basically wondering, what's the big deal with having police officers there in uniform? And if you have any thoughts on that subject, you're welcome to call us, 952-946-6205. But to go to Mark's question, I think the point is, Hunter, and we can both talk about this here, is that there's a history of the police having issues with police brutality, I should say, against people that are in the LGBT community, and especially those members that are of color.
Yeah, people of color. I mean, Minneapolis it has an important role in the formation of Black Lives Matter because it was really one of those turning point cases. In 2015, the Jamar Clark shooting, with conflicting accounts of whether he was reaching for the officer's gun or handcuffed when he was shot and killed. There was no charges against the officers of the killing. Then we had Philando Castile in 2016, shot in his car, which was streamed on Facebook Live by his girlfriend, when he told the officers he was carrying a gun and that he was trying to reach for his wallet, and he said it, that he was not reaching for his gun but reaching for his wallet, but got shot mid-sentence of that.
And I think the point to bring up, though, is that, you know, you brought up the history of some of those shootings we've had in Minnesota. I mean, there's several more we'll get to in a second on. They're just a long history of police shootings, but it's just the idea of having someone in uniform, fully armed, at a Pride festival when there's a history of police brutality against people of color who are part of the LGBT community. It just doesn't necessarily give a good look, and I think it makes people, I mean, Hunter, you and I, we're not members of that community. We're cis, white, straight males.
Mm-hmm.
But I can kind of empathize and see how that would give off a very threatening atmosphere to people who are attending Pride Festival.
Yeah, tensions are high, and there's a lot of mistrust in the community. So I can understand the campaign.
952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, if you have any thoughts on Pride Festival, which took place this past weekend. Of course, the other big story that took place over the weekend was, unfortunately, another police shooting of a person of color. Just looking at the Straight News article, in case you missed it over the weekend, according to police, just before 5:30 p.m. on Saturday, at least two people called 911 to report that a man walking in the 4700 block of Bryant Avenue North was firing a 9mm handgun into the air and into the ground. And this is a quote from the police regarding the report. They say, as the officers exited their squad car, the subject fled on foot carrying a black and silver gun. The officers pursued the subject, who turned out to be Thurman Blevins, on foot for several blocks. At one point during the encounter, the officers fired their weapons, striking Blevins. He was pronounced deceased at the scene. However, there's conflicting reports as to what exactly happened, because several witnesses said that they did not see Thurman Blevins carrying a weapon. And as he ran away from police, they tried to use a taser on him, according to several witnesses. He was running from police when he was shot, they said. One of the witnesses, this is 16-year-old Ivan Diola, said he watched the scene unfold from his front yard. He said he had been chatting with Blevins, whom he's known for a couple years. Minutes before, he said he saw Blevins running west on 48th with a bottle in one hand with two officers in pursuit. The three disappeared into the alley between Aldrich and Bryant, and he said, I could not see him running as fast as... he said he could see him running as fast as he could, screaming, I don't have a gun. He only had a bottle in his hand. So there's some big conflicting reports going on between what the police are saying and also what several witnesses. I, of course, was just talking about what one of the witnesses, 16-year-old Ivan Diola, said. I was watching the live stream of, the news organization that was also live streaming in North Minneapolis at that time. But they were also interviewing several other witnesses as well. So this really leads to the need to have an independent investigation in terms of what exactly happened to build trust between the police and also what happened with the community as well. I think it's very important to build up that trust. There's been some quotes. This is from police union head Lieutenant Bob Kroll, who said he hasn't seen the body camera footage but has spoken with the officer's attorney, Kevin Short, and he says, quote, this is nothing short of heroic activity, adding that the officers gave Blevins numerous commands to drop the weapon before they fired. Neither officer, he said, used a taser, referring to several false narratives that have been brought up. So, again, conflicting reports, and I think, Hunter, it's really important that we get this body camera footage released as soon as possible.
Yeah, and on body cameras, I mean, that's been a huge controversy with all this, with many times where the body cameras weren't turned on. And I was thinking, why don't we have it where the instant that an officer takes his gun out of the holster, that the body cameras are activated both on person and in the squad car? I mean, that couldn't be that hard to devise a technology for and then implement and make it into law.
Yeah, fortunately, and that's a good point to bring up. You were saying not only when you pull that gun out of the holster does it automatically start recording. You were saying it can work with maybe the squad car camera as well, or any other cameras around the officer or the scene of the alleged crime.
Yeah, and it's just, it protects everyone then. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good for the officers. It's good for the potential victims of this. Everyone is protected because we can have a firsthand account of what happened. Just devise a way that this no longer happens, where there isn't proper footage that could have been prevented.
And to bring up, the officers and the police department in Minneapolis say they do have body camera footage of the incident, but it hasn't been released yet. And I know you have to go through your proper channels to get that released, but I think the sooner you get that out in public so we can see what actually happened, the better, because a lot of people have, as we were talking about just in our last interview, just because of the history against police brutality against certain groups of people, there is a lot of mistrust. Even if the shooting was so-called justified, and let's say Blevins was running away from the police, and what the police said is 100% true, you can still see how there's a lot of mistrust between mm-hmm. the community and the police department in North Minneapolis.
Yeah, and it's... I really don't see clear motives for either party to lie in this, really, because we're talking about mm-hmm. people that are uninvolved. Some knew the person, some were just strangers, so I don't see incentive for any of them to lie, or the police in general.
It's just a tough issue on how you try to rebuild that trust between police and the community. If you have some thoughts on how we can do that, you can give us a call at 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. We're going to take a break, have more on the way on AM 950. You are listening to Brett Johnson and Hunter Haas filling in for Matt McNeil on your Monday afternoon.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know how you can go solar with All Energy Solar, even way up north in Minnesota. Lots of people ask them, isn't Minnesota too cloudy for solar? No. The truth? For one thing, Minneapolis gets nearly as much sun each year as Houston, Texas. But it isn't just about how much sun you get. It's also about having access to great local incentive programs that make solar affordable. Learn what your options are to save with solar and visit allenergysolar.com today.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts, Snap Construction, at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson, Hunter Haas, filling in for Matt McNeil. Monday afternoon, drive time, 3:35. Nice weather outside, although I think we're supposed to get some thunderstorms coming up tomorrow, if I heard that forecast right, Hunter.
Yeah, we got some rain coming tonight and tomorrow, it looks like.
Just been kind of a rainy June, if you ask me. It seems like we've had a chance of rain just about every day.
That's what I said. It's April and June, really. April showers.
And you're bringing up nightmares of that April blizzard
that we had.
That was
miserable April this year.
No kidding. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. The overarching theme that we've been talking about today on AM 950 has been, how do you build trust between police and the community at large, if it's even possible to do so? We talked earlier with the chair of the Stonewall DFL, Erica Mauder, about concerns that a lot of members of her caucus had at Pride Festival yesterday with a police presence. And then we, of course, unfortunately had another shooting that took place on Saturday night of Thurman Blevins, who was shot by police after they say he was allegedly running from them and had a gun in hand. However, witnesses' accounts are very much different from what the police say. So it really highlights the need to have an independent investigation to figure out what exactly happened.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing on that point, when it comes to having that independent investigation, I think it's important to say that you can't just have someone who's local conducting that investigation, if that makes sense, because to expand on that, I think if you bring in someone local, they naturally have a bias. If you're talking about a local prosecutor who works with the police every day is kind of the point I'm getting at, and it kind of disincentivizes them to actually indict a police officer.
It's tough with our long history in this, too. I mean, there's a lot of tangled webs. You have to seek outside an impartial source for this and to just be apparent to the public so we can start to build back this trust.
Yeah, and if you even look at the history of grand jury cases in the United States, not saying that this case or any others in Minnesota have gone to a grand jury or will go to a grand jury, but there have been 162,000 federal cases in 2010, which is the most recent year where we have data for federal cases involving grand juries. And grand juries declined to return an indictment in just 11 of those 162,000 cases. That's like 99.9999, however much percent that federal prosecutors can get an indictment against somebody. I mean, what I've heard Norman Goldman say in the past when it comes to grand juries is that it's basically just a way for a grand jury to say to a prosecutor, okay, you're okay to proceed. It's not actually the trial. It's just kind of an extra step that you make a prosecutor clear to make sure you're not getting frivolous charges that are being brought against people. That's kind of the point of a grand jury. It's not necessarily to determine if the suspect is guilty or innocent. It's more to determine that this case can proceed. There's not frivolous charges. If a prosecutor wants to get an indictment, they can get that pretty much any time they want when it comes to a grand jury. And in fact, even looking at some further statistics, now granted, those are federal cases, not state cases where we don't necessarily have a lot of data. But one state that did provide data is the state of Texas. And actually the city of Houston, where they had 81 police shootings between 2008 and 2012 that were brought to grand juries in that area, and only one returned an indictment, which is unbelievable to think about how, you know, prosecutors can get an indictment pretty much whenever they want.
And that's why there's so much frustration in this, is people feel there's no justice in this because the pattern's been seen over and over again where there is no convictions in cases like this.
If you have any thoughts, give us a call, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Do have a comment from our Facebook feed. This is from Lisa, and I think she's bringing up the point how, and this was something I was going to get to earlier, is that if he was running away from the police, that would be Thurman Blevins, did he necessarily deserve to get shot? What kind of threat did he actually pose if he's running and without a gun? Because what I think about is how we had Dylan Roof. Do you remember Dylan Roof? And I'm trying to think of who else. Who was the guy that shot up the church in South Carolina?
Oh, yes. Dylan, yeah.
I think that was Dylan Roof.
Yeah.
But the point is, he was brought out in police custody. He wasn't shot at all. Who else am I thinking of? The Colorado shooter in the movie theater. He also brought out alive. He wasn't shot. So I think there definitely is a different standard between having a white suspect and having a non-white suspect when it comes to police actually shooting someone, whether or trying to talk them down and actually just arrest them and bring them into custody.
Yeah, to me it's clear both anecdotally and from the statistics that people of color are much more likely to have encounters with police that end in deadly force. Jacob Fry posted about this, and I think he sums up the environment where we face here in the Twin Cities. He says, regardless of what happened tonight, too many times people from across Minneapolis and the Twin Cities have been stung by the pain of a loss of life in the course of an encounter with law enforcement. Regardless of what happened tonight, the historical trauma inflicted on communities of color is never far from nearly every facet of our life. Today we grieve as our memories are stirred by a now too familiar feeling by the loss of someone's son, brother, friend, and neighbor. Events of the past several years and now tonight have tested our city in ways that are new to some neighborhoods but are all familiar for others, strained relations between law enforcement officials and the communities they serve, especially communities of color, have exacted a toll on the very soul of our city, our region, and this nation.
And I think he's had a good response to this as well, where he's kind of suspended any political activities that he had planned for the next few days to try to take a very serious tone. I think he recognizes the gravity of what's happening with this situation in light of how many police-involved shootings we've had over the years in Minnesota. I mean, just think to, was it last year we had the Justine Damon shooting? And I still don't think we've had any charges filed in that case yet, have we?
No, that in March, the officer was put into jail and then bailed out the next day, and right now there are no charges against him.
But we've had so many. We had Jamar Clark, as you were bringing up, Philando Castile. What else have we had over the years?
Well, those are the big ones. Jamar Clark, Philando Castile, Justine Damon, and then now Thurman Blevins. But I want to go back quick to Jacob Fry. And immediately when this happened, he issued that statement that I read a part from. And then before the Pride Parade, he canceled his plans for marching. His attention and work this morning would be on the shooting. And then today he also canceled a fundraiser he had scheduled to continue working with law enforcement and the others involved in the shooting. So the mayor, it's good to see the initiative and the severity of this, because this issue has been so dividing for our community, and it's nice to see him take that.
Yeah, if you have any thoughts on Mayor Fry's response or thoughts in general on how to try to bridge that distrust that the police and the community at large have in general with each other, give us a call at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Also have another comment from our Facebook feed. This one is from Lisa Gross. She says, white people have got to take responsibility for their unnecessary fear of the black man. That is white people's flaws, not ours. So Lisa also, I think, is bringing up that point as well, that there is kind of that unconscious bias that a lot of people have where they see someone of color and they naturally are scared as compared to seeing someone who is white, and they generally will just stop them and not necessarily have the same type of force they might have with someone who is a person of color. Do we have a caller on the line? We have Mike from Columbia Heights. He wants to chime in on the police shootings. Mike, what are your thoughts today?
Hi guys. You know, there's a Supreme Court case called Graham versus Connor, which in essence says that the police are omnipotent, and unless you're right there in their boots in that situation, you can't make a judgment. So in essence, it's a license to kill. They can do anything they want. And the case I think that really brings up the injustice in this system is the fellow, I think it was a young guy named Lee, who was riding away on his bicycle, and the
Minneapolis police shot him down, and they went over and they found a gun, and they traced the gun back, and they found out that the gun was out of the evidence room in this, for the city of Minneapolis, and it went to court, and Paul Magnuson, the former Supreme Court judge in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, threw it out because he said it would be too prejudicial to the defendant, to the police, that the jury should find out that this guy got, that the gun was out of the police evidence room, because it just obviously points to a throwdown, you know?
Now, Mike, that case rings kind of a bell for me. Do you know about what year that took place in? Was it a few
years? I'm thinking maybe 2011.
2011, yeah, that kind of rang a bell for me as well.
And then the policeman that did it, they threw the case out. He was back on the force. And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, he got tossed off for good because he tuned up somebody else with no justification, and so they wound up running him off the force. I think his name was Anderson, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mike,
check it out. You can find it.
Yeah, we'll definitely check that out. Mike, thanks for calling in. Appreciate the call. So Mike brings up that point, how we had that shooting a few years ago of, again, another person of color who had that same situation happen to them.
Yeah, it's clear that this has been going. Police have been getting off with this time and time again. And personally, I can't believe the Philando Castile ruling went the way it did, because I thought that was the best way to make an example of this, to just show that officers will be held accountable. But we didn't even see that there.
And to recognize police, of course, do have a very tough job. There's no doubt about that. I think it would be good to get more training in terms of racial bias or any other bias you can have. I know specifically the Minneapolis Police Department has been trying to, up the ante on that training, but I would be totally up for raising their pay as long as we get them more training on unconscious bias and making sure we don't have these types of incidents. If it means more training but also paying them more, I think that's well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
952-946-6205. If you have any thoughts on the subjects we've been talking about today, 952-946-6205. Hunter, I know we've been talking on some heavy subjects today, but
yes.
We are going to lighten things up eventually. We have what I've done for a couple shows as I've been filling in for Matt, and also during our 4 o'clock hour, our stupid Trump news. We're going to get to that on the other side of the break to try to lighten the mood, but if you do have thoughts on the other subjects we've been talking about, call us at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. You are listening to Brett Johnson and Hunter Haas filling in for Matt McNeil on your Monday afternoon.
Hello, friends. I've been talking to you about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens, Minnesota's first green cemetery dedicated to celebrating life and protecting our environment. One of the many wonderful things they have is something called the Living Urn. Ashes are buried in an urn with seedlings, ultimately coming back to life as a glorious tree. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Why don't you log on to the website, mngreengraves.com. Learn more about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. See if it might be something that's meaningful for you.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Kevin Ross here, inviting you to our brand new store called Ambibulous. What does Ambibulous mean? It means one who enjoys alcoholic beverages of all sorts. Ambibulous is a Minnesota maker's market. Unlike traditional liquor stores, we feature only craft beer, wine, and spirits made here in Minnesota. We are ready to guide your selections, where you can build your own 4 or 6 packs. Find us at 949 Hennepin Avenue East in Northeast Minneapolis, or online at ambibulousmn.com.
Get your vehicle's summertime service done at Rudy Luther Toyota. The last thing you need is a breakdown while on a road trip or heading to the lake. Regardless of where you've purchased your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is your number one destination for auto service and repair. Routine maintenance or a larger repair, easily schedule your appointment on their website, RudyLutherToyota.com. I trust them. They're fast, courteous, and they do the job right. Get your vehicle summer ready at Rudy Luther Toyota, 5 miles west of downtown Minneapolis on 394.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Hunter filling in for Matt McNeil on a Monday afternoon. Heard Matt just talking about Rudy Luther Toyota. Pretty sure he's been driving his Sienna all over the state. I know he has all sorts of errands that he's been trying to run during his sort of vacation. I know he's getting some rest and relaxation, but I know he's also been running the kids around to all those activities. So hopefully Matt, when he's back on Friday, is feeling nice and refreshed. A few more days of substitute hosts. You, of course, have me and Hunter today. Tomorrow, still a little bit of a TBA. I think it's Hunter and myself again. You get us for 2 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours. So if you've enjoyed the hour, you get us double the time. If not, well, I guess you got to suffer through it for twice as long tomorrow. Then Wednesday, we got Doug Padgett filling in for both hours. Thursday, still looking at for where the plan is on that day. Then Friday, Matt McNeil back in the seat coming up Friday at 3 o'clock. And should also say coming up right after Hunter and myself today, 4 o'clock, Ellie Krug back in studio. Always good to get Ellie and her perspective in.
And at the booth for at Pride, lots of Ellie fans. Lots of love for her.
Tremendous host. And we're really glad to be having her filling in during the 4 p.m. hour coming up in just a few minutes. Well, we've been talking about some heavy subjects today in terms of distrust between the police and the community, I think, is kind of the overarching subject. We talked about the police presence at the Pride Festival, and then, of course, the unfortunate shooting we had over the weekend of the man in North Minneapolis, Thurman Blevins. We do have a caller on the line who wants to chime in on police killing unarmed black men, and this is Joan from Minneapolis. Joan, what are your thoughts?
Well, it occurred to me while I was listening to the discussion that actually, before any of those that you mentioned that were murdered, there was a young man named Franklin, the Terrence Franklin. I'm not remembering really well. I should have done the research before I called. But he was the first of the high notorious.
Do you know about when that happened? That name kind of rings a bell for me, but I don't quite have the details in my...
I'm thinking 2010.
Okay.
In the ballpark, maybe a little bit later than that, but... It was Franklin. That's the name I remember of it. Terrence might have been the one.
It was 2013, and yes, you're right. It was Terrence Franklin. Multiple times by Minneapolis PD.
So he was kind of the first of those high-profile shootings.
Exactly. 2013. Okay, good.
Hey, Joan, thanks so much.
Thank you
so much for calling today.
Thank you.
952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Not really a good way to transition this, but I think we need a lighter end of the hour since we've been talking about some heavy subjects.
Loosen up.
So the last segment when I've been filling in, I do what we call stupid Trump news. In a previous radio life, I just did what was flat-out stupid news, which was pretty much just reading police blotter and the funny police arrests you get around the country. But now that I get to host a political talk show, we can relate this straight up to Donald Trump, I think.
Well, there's about an equal amount of both, of stupid Trump news and stupid any other news.
I think Trump might win in that.
Yeah.
It would be close, though. So I've kind of gone back into the archives, and I've looked at an article from Think Progress that they just printed today, and they've gone back and looked at some of the rather controversial tweets that Donald Trump has made before he was president of the United States. Hunter, I know you've been highlighting some of your, quote, favorites, I guess. I don't know if favorites is really the right term, but he's got some pretty shocking thoughts that he made a few years ago. Why don't you read a couple of your favorites?
This one, I think, sums up everything nicely. This is from 2012. It makes me feel so good to hit sleazebags back. Much better than seeing a psychiatrist, which I never have.
No kidding. Can you imagine if you had Donald Trump and you were a psychiatrist and you had him sitting on the couch or laying on the couch Man, that would be really fascinating to get into everything psychologically about that guy.
It would be fascinating, but it is not reality because apparently he has never seen one.
Yeah, as I said, no kidding.
It's a fantasy.
Because I think there's some real issues between Donald Trump and, well, his dad. Some major issues that I think have really formed the Donald the way he has today. What else do you got for us?
This is from 2013. I know some of you may think I'm tough and harsh, but actually I'm a very compassionate person with a very high IQ, with strong common sense.
He has the best words, and he has a very good brain. Wasn't that one of his other quotes that he had during the campaign?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one certainly one of my favorites as well.
Norman always plays that drop. I have the best words.
What context was he saying that again?
I can't remember that.
Putting you on the spot with that. Well, while you're looking through your list, I'll go through one of my favorites right here. And it's funny, some of these I can't even say on air.
Plenty of those.
There's plenty of profanity in some of these tweets, but I'll go with how nobody respects women more than Donald Trump. This is one he gave to Arianna Huff. He says, Arianna Huff is unattractive both inside and out. I fully understand why her former husband left her for a man. He made a good decision. Ouch.
Here's another one for a woman. This is Bette Midler. While Bette Midler is an extremely unattractive woman, I refuse to say that because I insist on being politically correct.
Really? He said he insisted on being politically correct. That kind of blows up his entire 2016 campaign.
Yeah.
Some of these I can't even read, but basically I'll just give you the overview. He was defending Paula Deen, and there's some language I can't quite say on the air due to FCC regulations. But, yeah, if you were defending Paula Deen back in 2012, 2013, that's certainly not a good thing.
Using racial slurs.
You got one more for us before we wrap up?
Let's see. Well, he was pretty mad at the Oscars, and
I know which one you're going for now. Yeah.
He believed that he should have won an Oscar for his portrayal in Home Alone 2. So should have at least been nominated for an Oscar in Home Alone 2. I agree.
I don't think he has a dry sense of humor. I kind of think he was actually serious.
Yeah.
He was in Home Alone, too. I remember that movie. He was in that for, like, maybe 5 seconds.
Yeah, I know. How would that be Oscar-worthy?
but he
believes this.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, he doesn't have a dry sense of humor. If he did, that would actually be a pretty funny quote. But I don't think he has a dry sense of humor bone in his body at all. Wow, we're already out of time filling in during the 3 p.m. hour. But the overall point I wanted to make just before we wrap up as we read some of these crazy tweets, and you can find these more on Think Progress, he hasn't changed in the 2 years or so that he's been president. These thoughts he had back in 2012, 2013, and 14, he probably still has them today, and he's the guy we elected president of the United States. Yikes.
But he won't see a psychiatrist.
That too. Ellie Krug filling in next on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.